You deserve better than your bank. Better service, better rates, better solutions. If you live or work in Cobb County, now is the perfect time to make the switch to the Credit Union of Georgia, the better way to bank. Since 1960, Credit Union of Georgia has been providing Northwest Georgia with financial solutions that make sense for your home, business, and family. As a homegrown, not-for-profit cooperative, our members are our mission. Not only will you get the best loan rates, you'll get personalized customer service from people who understand your needs. Plus, Credit Union of Georgia provides real convenience with a network of more than 30,000 accessible ATMs and branch locations across the country. Of course, there's also 5 locations right here in Cobb County. Ready to see how much better your banking can be with Credit Union of Georgia? Become a member today or apply for a loan online by visiting www.cuofga.org. Credit Union of Georgia, the better way to bank.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sunday Cobb Life podcast. This is Cobb Life editor Katie Ruth Camp, and I'm so excited to be here today with one of our 20 in their 40s recipients, if you got the magazine this month, Melanie Kagan. So say hello to everyone, Melanie.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So Melanie is the CEO of Center for Family Resources. And I know you guys have not been busy at all in this past year, right?
Yeah, we took a break. It's been great.
There's not been a need for your services at all during a pandemic, right?
Yeah, not at all. None. Everybody's doing fantastic.
And you know, not to make light of it, though, for people who are not familiar with CFR, kind of explain what your organization does.
Sure. So CFR has actually been around for a long time. So for those of you who know, you know, but Cobb County has sort of birthed us. And 60 years ago, we were started by some really great businessmen in the community who saw a need, and they brought together some volunteer organizations. We were Cobb Emergency Aid, have always done emergency assistance in some form or fashion. In the beginning, it really was just any emergency, you know, families who needed food or clothing, or if there was a fire or an illness, I mean, any of those types of things. Mm-hmm. This agency helped with that. So over the years, we've morphed. We now primarily deal with housing instability, homelessness, still emergency situations. We do a lot of prevention, a lot of intervention, and a lot of really just case management and holding people, you know, when they're about to fall and making sure that they mm-hmm. have what they need to get on their feet. So our goal is really self-sufficiency, which is, you know, an interesting word because it can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. But we like to really refer to it more as just stability. Mm-hmm. What does stability look like? What does it look like when our families don't have to question whether they're going to make rent or buy groceries or have utilities? How do we get them to that more stable place where mm-hmm. they can start focusing on their long term? So that's
yeah,
what we do.
And I mean, you're probably in a unique position where your need has probably never been greater than it is right now. But then, like, you know, I had Dr. Reigert in here a couple weeks ago from Mess Ministries, and he was talking about, like, you know, used to they had 17,000 volunteers before the pandemic. Now you can't have any volunteers, but you have more need than ever. How are you guys balancing that?
Yeah, it's interesting. We have a small food pantry, and God bless Must because they're a huge partner of ours too.
And that's what I love about this community too, is everybody kind of partners together and helps each other out. It's like you're not competing against each other. It's like, how can I help you and how can you help me? And
we don't have to compete. I mean, we have there's so many things we do that are different, but we both bring our own unique strengths to the table.
Yeah.
So things that they do, we don't do, things that we do, they don't do, and mm-hmm. we just try really hard to serve the best we can so that people are getting what they need where they need it.
Right.
So it's great. It's great. Their team is great. We love working with them. There's a lot of organizations we work with, but we're fortunate in that we don't actually rely on volunteers as heavily. Our food mm-hmm. pantry is very small in comparison. Mm-hmm. But we were closed for several months because we just didn't have volunteers that wanted to come in. And,
sure.
you know, from a staffing perspective, we've had to be I mean, we're an essential business because we provide emergency assistance, but you still have to be really cognizant of your staff.
Yeah.
We're working at a much faster pace. The need is ridiculous, and we're asking our staff to sort of be present and be doing things mm-hmm. that other people are not having to do. Mm-hmm. So it's a balancing act because we can only do so much before mm-hmm. the staff is the one that's having the hard time, right?
Right.
I mean, we can't burn out on both ends. And so you just kind of roll with the punches and figure it out. The community has been great. We've had a lot of support. Mm-hmm. We've really leaned on partnerships. So when food is not our specialty, and we're okay with that. So mm-hmm. when that was the heavy lift, we gave over 20,000 pounds of food to other agencies mm-hmm. That were doing mass distribution and could get that out the door faster because mm-hmm. it doesn't do any good sitting in my hallway.
Sure, yeah.
So that's what we've really done is just kind of leaned on each other and figured out how to make things work. But, you know, we've been fortunate in that we've kind of just steadily kept going. We haven't had any major disruptions. Aside from just trying to figure out what it looks like to work from home or, you know, partially staffed every now and then.
Yeah, and I'm familiar with it just because I've volunteered for Thanksgiving the last several years through Cobb Young Professionals and then obviously just writing about CFR. But for people who are unfamiliar, what is the process if, you know, say I don't think I can pay my power bill this month or, you know, something? What is the process for getting help to people?
So we're really fortunate, again, with, you know, just our community and how it's worked. We have a partnership with Cobb Douglas Public Health. So we've added two very specific, unique positions in our office that are our resource coordinators. Mm-hmm. So pretty much anyone who calls into our office is going to get a call back. They're going to speak to a human, mm-hmm. Which is kind of what we pride ourselves on.
Yeah.
Is that we provide that sort of touch and
imagine that.
It's, in a world where no one ever gets to talk to anybody and everything's on time.
I think it was like my internet company or something a couple weeks ago. It was like, press 1 for press 4 for. And I was like, for like 10 minutes, I was like, can I please just speak to a human being?
I just need a person. Yeah. So that's our process and how it works right now. I mean, of course, there are efficiencies that come with, mm-hmm. you know, online forums and things like that. But especially when people are in crisis, they want to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. They want to have somebody listen to them. So we have two resource coordinators that will talk to everybody who calls our office. Now, I mean, our call volume is insane right now.
Is it? So what is it right now compared to like maybe January of last year?
Oh, gosh. It's probably doubled at least.
Really?
I mean, we're taking 50 to 60 calls a day easily.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, and it ebbs and flows. I mean, we have some moments where it seems a little calm and we're kind of like, what is our phones working? Is everything okay? but then it just will spike back up the mm-hmm. next week. And it just kind of depends. People are in different spaces. And
I was going to say, what are most of the calls that you're getting?
Almost all of them are rent assistance.
Really?
Yeah. We do have some that are utility bills, some that are food. And so we do food appointments for mm-hmm. people who just need a, you know, food box for the week or the month. Mm-hmm. But almost all of them are rental assistance or some kind of financial assistance.
Right.
So our resource coordinators will talk to people and they'll sort of assess what they need. So they do a really quick, just kind of down and dirty, what's your situation?
Right.
You know, what are you looking at? What do you need? And then we have so many different programs because of different funding streams. They all look a little different, and that's really hard to, you know, put on a flyer and explain to people. So it's just easier for us to kind of talk through it, and then we will get them to either the right case manager on our team, or we have a triage that'll just send them out to whatever agency we know will help them faster or better.
Well, and I'm sure you're seeing so much need, and it's so hard to, like, tell people I can't help you.
It's awful.
What are some of like the more kind of heartwarming things that you guys have done in the past year? Is there like a person or a family that stands out to you?
Gosh, there's a lot. You know, this year has been so unique for everybody. What we've seen, especially over these last few months, as this kind of stretched into a period of time we weren't expecting, we've seen a lot of people who have never had to seek assistance. Mm. So this is the first time they've ever navigated a system. This is the first time they've ever not paid their rent on time. But people have exhausted every resource they have. I mean, we've got people who have made it work as long as they can and mm-hmm. are just out, you know, they're out of everything. They're out of energy. They're out of money. They're out of support. They're out of favors. And so we've had some really wonderful, heartwarming stories come back where people have just said, you know, I was working again, but I had exhausted everything and I was 2 months behind on my rent and I had no idea how I was ever going to make that up. But you guys were able to get me back on my feet and I've moved forward.
Oh, yeah.
So we've had a lot. We had there's one story and it's, you know, not all of them are perfect. We can't help everybody.
Sure.
Some of them are sad. Mm-hmm. But we had this really great family come in. He was so sweet, this gentleman. He had 4 kids with him in tow. They had walked to our agency to pick up food baskets.
Aww.
And they were staying an extended stay. And they could not have been over the age of 8, like the oldest.
Oh,
wasn't.
Wow.
So he had 4 kids under the age of 8.
Yeah.
And they were the sweetest. I mean, they were the sweetest kids. They walked over with him. We got them sort of set up. We had no idea they were walking and didn't have transportation. Mm-hmm. And so they were sitting in our lobby. It was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. So we were getting ready to close the office for sort of extended time. Mm-hmm. It was 4:30. You know, it's like all the things.
Yeah.
But he was so gracious and he was just so peaceful almost that he was just taking care of his kids and kind of going through the motions of whatever he had to do. And they were prepared to walk back and they were several miles away. It was not close.
Really?
My case manager called me and she said, I just don't know what to do, but this is a lot of food and I don't want them to have to walk. So, you know, we ordered them a lift and we gave them some bus passes because he had to come back and do intake paperwork and kind of get some other things taken care of. And, got them some food, but while they were waiting for the lift, the little girls were in the lobby playing, and we have hygiene kits that people bring us, and they were in these cute little girl purses, and so I brought them some of those, and they were so excited with their little like Kleenex packages and their chapsticks, and it was just. But those are the fun things that you at least know you're helping somebody in that minute to get a smile out of them or to make them feel a little more secure.
Yeah, because I mean, like you said, there's probably a lot of people that aren't used to asking for help that are having to now, so that's also probably difficult to navigate to make people feel comfortable. Like. Hey, it's okay. Like, there's a lot of people hurting right now. It's okay to ask for help.
Yeah, we get a lot of feedback from our case managers in particular and how helpful it is that they just listened. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it takes 2 minutes to understand what they need, but the conversation is 15 minutes because they just need somebody to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
And our case managers are so phenomenal at that. And they all do such a good job with relating to these people and making them feel heard and making them feel human.
Yeah.
And assuring them that, you know, you're not a bad person.
Yeah.
This isn't a bad thing. This is just a bad situation.
I mean, this is, you know, this whole pandemic is so unique in that, I mean, obviously the Great Recession hurt a lot of people for sure. I mean, it was a bad thing. But this seems to have touched on everyone.
Yeah.
You know, not just people in certain sectors or homeowners or whatever. Like, this seems to, like, everyone has been impacted by this in one way or another.
Yeah.
And obviously today, we were just talking before this, COP Schools announced that they're going completely virtual.
Yeah.
Which, if you can stay home.
Yeah, wonderful.
That's great.
Easy.
But I imagine most of your clients are working hourly jobs. You know, so it's either I either go to work and make money or I stay home with my kids because they have to be virtual. Like, how are you guys handling that? Do you have any advice for them?
That's a really hard one because there's there's so few choices sometimes for these folks. And so you have to just try to work with them the best you can. That's why the rental assistance has been made available. The county commissioners just passed a memorandum of understanding to get some additional funds out there. And there's some money from our CDBG office, which is the Community Development Block Grant. Because to the extent that we can at least just keep these people housed and they have to figure out the work stuff kind of in between, I mean, that's all we can do right now. Some of these folks, I talked to a woman yesterday. She emailed me last night. I told you. She said, I've been having to take a day or two off of work a week to help my kid with virtual learning. And I thought, what's happening the other, you know, 3 or 4 days of the week. And that's the bad part of this is that there's a lot of kids that are sort of lost right now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of parents that are doing the best they can. But when you, like you said, when you're in that situation, what is the right answer? I mean, do I pay my rent and my bills or do I stay home with my kid? And
yeah,
say for some, and I, you know, I won't judge anyone for whatever choice they make because they have to do what they have to do for their family. But the rental assistance will definitely help in some of those cases.
Yeah.
It's just employers, I think, are doing the best they can, but not everybody can be flexible. You can't bag groceries from home, and you can't, you know, run a cash register from home. And it's a hugely challenging situation. And I know Cobb Schools and Marietta have all done – they've done a lot of work to try to get at least, you know – the younger kids or whatever populations they can in the classroom so that there is some stability. And I know, you know, the YMCA has been fantastic and they've offered up, you know, places where kids can go for the day. And there's a lot of places that are trying really hard. We've seen some really great sort of neighborhood options where people are just sort of round robining, like you take the kids for this day and I'll take them this day. But it's tough. It's just been a really tough year for everybody.
Well, and I, you know, I don't envy the superintendents because I know that they have a very hard choice to make too. I mean, you've got to keep your people safe, your kids and your staff. Yeah. And, you know, with everything right now, you know, it's do you keep people safe or do you keep them in person? And I just – I can't imagine so many of these kids are probably not learning the same – from, you know, if they even have a laptop. Like, I just can't imagine the challenges they're going to face in the next couple of years and the consequences of this because it's just going to put so many people behind.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, everyone's doing the best they can. I mean, my hat's off to teachers who have tried to figure out how to engage kids. I mean, I listen to countless lessons from my kids'
teachers. Well, I was going to say, because you have kids too, right?
And, you know, it's amazing what they are doing and how they're doing it. And
for
a lot of them, it was a learning curve just to figure out how to use the Zoom. I mean, for all of us, right?
Yeah.
How many times have we, oh, you're on mute. Oh, I can't see you anymore. Oh, I didn't know this was on. I mean,
exactly.
The teachers are in the same boat, you know. And but they've done a phenomenal job. But even, you know, my son, I got an email from my son's chemistry teacher because she's got COVID, and so she's home.
Yeah,
and she can't work. I mean, you can't, you know, when you're on sick leave.
Yeah,
you're on sick leave, and so she's like apologetic that she can't do more and while she's sick. And it's just, it's such a heartbreaking situation for everybody because teachers want to teach and they want to do what's best for the kids, but everyone's just in a no-win situation.
It really is. I mean, there's no best choice. There's no, you know, because if you choose one way, people are going to complain about that. You choose that way, other people are going to complain about that. I mean,
I think they've done what they can and they've done a great job of trying to navigate it. My kids have actually gone in person. And, you know, they went back in November and it was great. We had no problems. We had no issues. We never even got contact traced. Like, they managed to get through all of last semester with no issues at all.
Yeah.
But this semester just started out a lot rougher.
What'd you say, like 6 days ago?
Yeah. We were, I mean, last Thursday, I guess, was our like first day back.
Yeah.
So we're not far into it. We're pretty, you know.
And how old are your kids, Melanie?
Older than I'd like to say. I have a daughter who's 15 and a son who's 17.
Oh, okay. And what schools are they at?
They're at Harrison
High
School. Yeah, we live out in the nether parts.
In the West Cobb.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we were talking about the need for CFR. With a greater need means a greater need for more money. And fundraising during a pandemic cannot be the easiest thing because I think, weren't you guys, your gala was like right at the cusp of when everything shut down. And I remember, because I was going to go, and I remember.
You and 500 other people.
Yeah, I know, right? And we were like, are they still having it? Or are they not having it? And I know that was probably a tough call because that's a huge fundraiser for you guys.
Huge.
Like usually about $500,000?
Yeah. Just under that. But it's, God, you're bringing up PTSD. So we were so sure that we were kind of going to get in under the wire and be like the last event.
Because what was the date for that?
March 14th.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was Saturday, March 14th. And so we, you know, Wellstar and actually Justin O'Dell, so O'Dell and O'Neill, they had donated individual hand sanitizers. We had enough for all the tables. Uh-huh. We had like Kleenex boxes everywhere. We were convinced. I mean, we were on it. We were like, we are going to do this. We're going to carry this out and we're going to get in right under the wire. And then, you know, that Wednesday night was the night that the president made his announcement, like the NBA stopped everything in the middle of games. And I just remember sitting at the table going, oh my God.
And so, oh, crap.
Yeah. Thursday morning, we had an emergency board meeting and we had to cancel and it was just painful.
Yeah.
We have been so phenomenally blessed by our sponsors and donors, though. Mm-hmm. We had very few people who, you know, took any issue with us canceling and they let us keep the money as just a straight donation. And that allowed us to really pivot and do the emergency assistance that we did early on. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what we would have done, to be honest, because at the time we were still in the conference center too.
Right.
So we're still in the Mansour Conference Center,
right,
which that was a revenue driver for us too. We held events all month long.
Sure.
So we went dark. I mean, the conference center went dark and that was $35,000 a month.
Yeah.
Immediately, that was gone, and then another 300,000+ from the gala that was gone. I mean, in a 5-hour window, and so it was tough. It was really
talk
tough.
About a gut punch,
yeah,
right?
Big time. But we had like the community just stepped up so phenomenally well. It was it was mind blowing to me how quick people responded and really wanted to help, and we got donations from people. I actually was interviewed on, I think it was 11 Alive, mm-hmm. like in April or May, about just what we were doing and the emergency responses. And that even just generated donations from people that live not anywhere near us but wanted to help and wanted to be part of it. So it's been great. But we, you know, talking about it this morning is that, you know, that there's a little bit of fatigue for everybody, and even in the donor fatigue of people like, okay, everybody needs money. Everybody needs donations. How do we make this work for long periods? But we've got a good team. We've got a great board. And so everybody's been very creative, and they've rolled with the punches of my crazy ideas that I'm coming up with to try to keep this all going. So needless to say, we're not having a gala.
I was going to ask you because it's always in March, right?
It's usually, February, March. We were already going to push it to spring just because it's really hard. That's a tight window around the holidays to be planning. But just the more we've been sitting with it and the more things have kind of unraveled with COVID numbers, we just aren't in a position where we feel like that's the smart thing to do. I don't know that I would survive another cancellation.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I think it would just kill everybody because it's such an amount of work to get it off the ground anyway.
Yeah.
So we're doing something totally different, and we're really hopeful that people will get excited about it.
Have you announced it yet?
Or? We have not officially announced it yet, but the committee is working on it. So, I mean, I can give you the sort of overview of it. We have a lot of sort of minor details that still need to be worked out. But we are launching our 2021 Parade of Playhouses. So the concept of Parade of Playhouses is that we are engaging with design teams and builders who will basically volunteer, donate their time, energy, talent, and resources to build children's playhouses. And then the playhouses will go on display for a two-ish week period of time in the spring where people can come see them, kind of, you know, read about them, see the creativity of the teams. And then we will have a sort of wrap-up event that's very small for sponsors and donors, but they'll be on auction. So the houses themselves will be auctioned off, and then a couple of them will be raffled. So we'll sell raffle tickets for them as well. But it'll be – just a fun event for people to get involved with.
How fun.
Yeah. Sort of focuses on our focus on children and families and making it fun. And the houses can actually be re-donated. So for somebody who wants to buy it in auction, we're going to have a list of schools or, you know, daycares or medical centers that would take them as well. It can be a secondary donation.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
That's our idea. Just working out, like I said, the details. But
well, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to talk about you. I know we've talked about CFR so much, but anyone who's read the magazine got a little glimpse of you. But we'll chat a little more about Melanie when we get back.
All right.
During difficult times, it can help to talk to a friend or neighbor. But once in a while, you need a lawyer. You need Atlanta's caring lawyers, Cawthorn, Knorr, and Owen. If you're considering ending your marriage, struggling with a stressful job situation, dealing with a devastating personal injury, or facing end-of-life issues, the team at Cawthorn, Knorr, and Owen is here for you. The Cawthorn, Knorr, and Owen team has been serving Marietta and Metro Atlanta since 1972. They believe that getting the best possible outcome for their clients begins with energetic and dedicated preparation. From starting a new business to planning an estate, Cawthorn, Knorr, and Owen have the experience to guide you through some of life's most challenging legal issues. So, the next time you need a cup of sugar or a ride to work, go ahead and call your next-door neighbor. But for the important life issues, turn to the experts, Cawthorn, Knorr, and Owen. To schedule an information session or case evaluation session, call 770-528-0150. That's 770-528-0150. Cawthorn, Knorr, and Owen, Atlanta's caring lawyers. You can search all over America, but you'll find America's largest gun store in Cobb County, Georgia. Adventure Outdoors, proud supporter of the Second Amendment and the red, white, and blue, with over 18,000 guns in stock every day. Did you know Adventure Outdoors is also home to one of Georgia's largest shooting ranges, the Remington Range, with basic range memberships starting at only $25 per month, which includes unlimited lane rental, 3 free firearm rentals per month, free shirt and hat, priority lane placement, and guest passes. Adventure Outdoors also offers family, corporate, and group plans. One of America's top shooting facilities is right here in Cobb County, and for only $25 a month, you can be a member and receive unlimited lane rentals and so much more. Support the Second Amendment and your right to own and bear arms, and practice and learn at Adventure Outdoors Remington Range today. Adventure Outdoors, South Cobb Drive in Smyrna, or online at adventureoutdoors.us.
Okay, we are back with Melanie Kagan. So tell me a little bit about you. I know through, you know, my research and stuff, you've got a lot of background in New Mexico. Is that where you grew up?
Yeah, that's where we're from.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So, Albuquerque, right?
Well, I lived in Albuquerque. I was born and raised in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Oh, my gosh. That is like, honestly, it's like my favorite town.
Oh, really?
So about 4 years ago, on a whim, I was covering this travel symposium at the Fox Theater, and I think he was like the arts director of Santa Fe, and he was speaking, and I was like, you know what, I've always wanted to go to Santa Fe, and I've also always wanted to go to Colorado and Wyoming and Montana.
All those Western
states. Yeah, and so I literally gave my grandparents a heart attack. I booked a flight to Albuquerque, rented a convertible when I got there, and then like spent like the next 10 days just traveling all the way up the West by myself. But that first night I stayed in Albuquerque, it was like an Airbnb, this artist couple that had like this little Adobe. It was so cool, and stayed the night. But I was still on Georgia time, so I woke up at like 5:30, and I was like, "What am I gonna do?" And so I looked up like best places to see the sunrise or whatever. So the volcanoes there,
yeah.
And I parked, and the gates were still locked, and I was like, I don't know if technically I'm supposed to. And I was like, oh, whatever.
That's fine.
I made
stay on the trail.
Yeah. And it was like the most beautiful thing, being on top of one of those volcanoes, and the mountains are all in front of me, all of Albuquerque's in front of me, and seeing the sun come up. So what a cool place to grow up.
It's gorgeous. It really is. I am a mountain girl. So coming here, it was really interesting because, one, I'm not – like nothing is green in Albuquerque or any part of New Mexico, really. So the green is like – so fascinating to me. I mean, I love it much, and it's so pretty.
So it's a lot of orange out there.
It's a lot of brown and a lot of orange. But I'm just a mountain girl through and through. Mountains are my sort of peace, my serenity, my calm. And we had mountains right there, but then we're close to Colorado, and we spent so much time there. So coming here, everyone's they're more beachy, you know, because you're close to the beach. And the ocean is great, and I enjoy that too. But I miss mountains. There's just nothing else.
I remember,
like,
and that was what was so neat about having a convertible too, because the mountains, they're just so huge out there. Like, you don't, like, it's so hard to even, like, talk about, because it's like, I mean, I could just keep looking up and up and up, and you'd still keep seeing them. Yeah. And I remember I talked to my dad, and I was like, everything out here makes Kennesaw Mountain look like a molehill.
When we moved here, our realtor was like, oh, we've got Kennesaw Mountain. I'm going to take you there so you can see it. I was like, what is this? This is not a mountain. Even we've been to North Carolina and, you know, into North Georgia and the Blue Ridge. And it's gorgeous. Don't get me wrong.
They're different type of mountains.
It's
they're green
so
mountains,
different.
Like you said. Yeah.
So different. So different. And it's just, Albuquerque was a cool place to be. And Santa Fe was a great place to grow up. I actually, it was my favorite job ever. And I would do this again in a heartbeat if I didn't have to, you know, if I could just carefree kind of work. I worked in a coffee bar that was behind a gallery on Canyon Road in Santa Fe, which is like the art capital of the Southwest.
Yeah.
And the gallery owners were like secondary little parents to me when I was in high school, and they didn't have kids, so I worked for them. I did all their art openings. I did art openings for like every gallery on the strip, and they would hire me to just be the hostess for the night and pour drinks and probably wasn't supposed to because I definitely wasn't 21, but make coffee, you know, all those things. But it was just the coolest job to just get to know those people and kind of see. And tourists would come in, and it's just a different type of sort of lifestyle and a different version of the world. And so I'll never forget that experience. It was so fun.
When I was in Santa Fe, it was in September. It was kind of like maybe the first or second week of September. So their big annual festival was going on. And I just remember it was so cool because they had all these dancers everywhere.
Fiestas.
Yeah. So I was just like, oh my gosh, this is, and you know, I love the arts too. So it's like every corner had a gallery or something. It was just so neat being there. And I was just so fortunate to be there, but gosh, to grow up there must have been so wonderful.
It was cool. It was cool. So when I was a kid, even like in elementary school, fiestas was such a big deal. We actually had like a whole day on the Fridays before fiestas where they actually might have even been the Thursday before, because I think we might have been off school Fridays. They would have the fiesta court, which was like the fiesta king and queen and all of the Indian princesses. And because it's all based on history, it's the Spanish conquistadors and the settlement of the area. And they'd come in and do like parades and parties, and we'd make the big paper flowers that went with it. And I mean, it was embedded in everything we did. I mean, even in school, you know, it was. And so, and then people laugh at me, but we learned how to ski in school. I mean, it was like a field trip. It was a class project, and you could sign up for the ski lessons. And
oh my gosh,
they would take us every Friday for 8 weeks at, you know, 9 in the morning.
We were taught line dancing in my PE.
That's what you get in the South, line dancing.
I know how to do the boot scoot and buggy, but I don't really know how to ski very well.
Yeah, I tell people that, and they're like, what? That's insane. I was like, it's just what we did. It was so, and it was awesome because you were with your friends and you got to spend half a day on the mountain.
Yeah,
it was
how cool.
Part of school.
Yeah. Oh, man. So what brought you from New Mexico to Georgia?
My sweet husband. So we were talking right before we started. Max and I, so I have a, we're a blended family. So I was married very young. I got married when I was 23. So I did everything in my 20s, sort of condensed. I got married, had two kids, and got divorced all before I was 30. And then was a single mom for a long time and kind of navigated that and got into nonprofit and just kind of, you know, did my thing in Albuquerque. And Max and I met when we worked for a healthcare company many years ago, actually, when I was pregnant with my daughter. We sort of just knew each other. We were friends. Mm-hmm. And then he moved to Denver. We kind of lost touch. I mean, all those things you hear about sort of, you know, long distance or, you know, star-crossed lovers. but we reconnected in 2015, and he was in Denver, and we started chatting and then sort of started dating, and things went from there. So we got married in 2014. got married in 2016, and then literally did every hard thing that you could possibly – like things you're supposed to space out over many, many years, we did in like 9 months.
You jumped in full force.
Oh,
right?
Gosh, yes. So there was an opportunity that he was approached by a recruiting company for, mm-hmm. and it was WellStar. We didn't even know at the time what the company was because they do that all very weird secret.
Yeah.
But he talked to them, and then they brought him here, and he started meeting with people, and he just loved it. He loved the company. He loved the culture. They brought me very quickly to try to get me sold on the area. But, you know, he has kids. I have kids. We were both previously married. There was so much that went into it. And so within – we got married in September. I think that he got the job offer like in January or February. And we had made the decision that we were going to move. And then we literally had to like – pack up a house, buy a house.
Honeymoon's over.
Yeah, done. Sorry. Pack up a house, buy a house, move him because he came in April. And then I had to work through, you know, there's a lot of details that have to go into moving children.
Sure.
So I had to work through that. And we didn't get out here till July. I lived with my sister for 2 months, like out of a suitcase. And he was gone and had to pull the kids out of their kind of, you know, hometown.
Sure.
And then come here, buy a house, set up a house, get kids in school, and then find a job and figure out what I was doing. And so we did that all literally from September when we got married to August of 2017 when we were here settled. So it was crazy. But it was him, I mean, his opportunity that kind of brought us here. But
yeah.
It was a good choice for us.
And then how did you come to CFR? Because I know many people know Jerry Barr, know that she was over that for so long before she retired. And a lot of people are like, oh, how are we going to replace her? You know,
and who is this girl? I've been so incredibly fortunate since moving here. And it's just been a blessing in so many ways. And Tracy, I hope she listens to this, but Tracy Rathbone Stife and I were actually talking about this. So it was so weird how the world is kind of smaller than we think sometimes.
Yeah.
So a person that I knew in Albuquerque who worked with my sister actually went to Emory with Tracy.
Okay.
And when he found out I was moving, and he's since moved from New Mexico and lives in Florida, but he was like, hey, I have somebody that I think you have to know if you're moving to that part of Georgia. Mm-hmm. She's like the mayor of Cobb County. She knows everybody. She's, you know, been there forever. And I didn't know anything. I had never even set foot in the state of Georgia.
Really?
Until we came to look for houses here.
You didn't even come to the Olympics, Melanie?
I didn't. I was a senior in high school for the Olympics, so my parents probably wouldn't have approved of that trip. But Tracy and I were connected that way, and I was very fortunate to kind of – she was the first person I ever knew.
Yeah, she's so great.
She is so great, and she is so connected, and she is so you know, generous and willing to kind of do things and help. And so that was incredible. And I started working for United Way of Greater Atlanta. I worked for United Way back in New Mexico, so I had some connections in the system.
Sure.
And were able to, you know, kind of jab my resume in to get noticed. And that was helpful because it gave me a little bit of an understanding of the lay of the land, and it gave me an opportunity to work with people and kind of know what was happening. But the offices that we occupied were in the Mansour Conference Center. So that's kind of how I knew about CFR and I knew about just the agencies in the area. But my job with United Way was the Northwest region anyway, so Cobb was kind of my home base.
Sure.
And somebody called me, actually a colleague from a business that I worked with, and said, you know, they're going to start a recruiting campaign for Jerry's position because she's retiring. She's announcing she's retiring.
Right.
And I really think you should do it. And I, you know, at the time I was very not sure. I mean, we had only lived here for 2 years. I wasn't – not even. It was like a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure, but I thought, you know what? I read about the agency, and I knew a lot about it, but I read about it, I kind of considered it, and I just decided to go for it. And so went through all the interviews and rounds with the board, and here we are. But that's kind of how it happened. It was kind of surreal, but it's been great. It's been such a great opportunity for me, and learning a lot about just business in general and kind of how things work and, you know, what has happened over the last 60 years, 30 years, 15 years that's, you know, made CFR so amazing and different. And it's been cool.
So what do you like to do outside of work? What are some of your hobbies in your free time
right? my husband and I tease because we have two teenagers, and my son now finally drives and has transportation. But before that, we were like chauffeurs. I mean, I should have just charged as an Uber driver because all we did was drive them around. But because our kids are so super social. My husband and I, you know, and I think I put this in the magazine, but we're kind of just fun. Like, we'll do whatever. We're up for anything. We love to try new things.
And he's so supportive of you, too. Like, every time I see you guys together, it's just like – it's just so heartwarming. He's just so happy to be there with you and support you. And it's
– he is. I would not be where I am without him. He has stepped up in every capacity to support me, to help me, to guide me. He's, you know, and he has a big job. I mean, what he does at WellStar is,
what does he do for WellStar?
He's the CFO for their medical group.
Okay.
For the WMG side. And
yeah.
So it's not like he's just going in and making widgets. I mean, he's got a big job too, but he is an incredible leader. Anyone who works with him or knows him or has worked with him, nobody ever has anything bad to say.
Well, and I don't even know him that well, but you can feel that energy from him when you're around him.
Yeah. He's tremendous. He's so good at what he does, and he's so good. His strong suits, and we kind of balance and complement each other a lot, because where I am sort of impatient or don't see things, he's very good at it, and vice versa. We help each other that way. But he's so good at developing people and really helping empower people and lead in that way. And he's done it for so long so well that he has given me a lot of confidence and courage and talks me through stuff and kind of helps me understand things. And I learn a lot from him, which is kind of cool. And, he's never said – I mean, he's never said no. He's never had hesitation. He's just whatever I want to do or whatever is coming my way or what. I mean, even with Leadership Cup, you know, I was nominated and chosen to participate early, like in 2019. Uh-huh. And I was like, this is such a big commitment. You know, I'm going to be out of pocket for like days at a time.
Yeah.
And he was like, absolutely, such a good opportunity. Go do it. Like, no hesitation whatsoever.
Yeah. Aww.
And that's, it's rare that you find that. And so we're so lucky. And, you know, everybody, you get where you are because of where you came from. I mean, there's no everything that you go through in life and everything you experience kind of prepares you for whatever is next. And we probably would not – if we would have met 15 or 20 years ago, we probably would not have been in the right space to be what we are for each other now.
Yeah, I'm such a big believer in everything happens when it's supposed to, because there's been so many things in my career or volunteering or that sort of thing. It's like – technically, it could have happened earlier, and at the time, I felt like it should have happened. But then when it actually happened, it was like, okay, I'm actually prepared for this now. Like, this is – it's happening when it's supposed to. So,
Yeah, I agree with that too. And sometimes it's hard to see that when it's happening. But you do – the reflection is always there. My husband has this very insightful saying that we use a lot actually in our house, and it's you always overestimate what you can do in a year and underestimate what you can accomplish in five. So, you know, in a year's time or in a short period of time, you're always kind of like, I should have done this. I would have done this. I wanted to be here. I wanted to do this. But then when you look at your 5-year, you're like, oh my gosh, I've done so much, or I've done so many things. I've accomplished so many things. So it helps us with like micro hustle, macro patience, right? Like, you're always kind
like
of
that.
Working hard, but on the macro, on the big scale, you have to have patience for things to sort of develop into what they are.
Right. Yeah. Because it's so easy to think like, oh, this should be happening. This should be happening. And then, but like you said, when you look back over 5 years, you're like, oh, those things did happen. They just happened when they were supposed to.
Exactly. And any year has taught us that 2020 should be that year, right?
Gosh,
that
I know.
Nothing happened the way we thought
like,
it was.
What happened to 2021, though? New Year's Eve, weren't we supposed to, like, hit the reset button?
I blame everybody who was like, thank God we're ending 2020. Like, can't wait for it to be over. I was like, y'all are just inviting trouble.
Like, 5 days in, the world's on fire. It's like, okay, well.
I talked to my mom last night. I called her, and I said, they live in North Carolina, and I said, how are you guys doing? She said, well, we're just fine. The rest of the world's lost its mind, but we're fine. We're just home. We're fine.
So at CFR, what are y'all preparing for 2021? Is it going to look much the same as 2020, do you think?
God, I hope not. This year has been so crazy. So the sale of the building was a big kind of catalyst.
Where
for
are
us.
Y'all now?
We're on Franklin Gateway.
That's right. Yeah.
And Cobb Park, South Marietta Parkway. So right off 75, like, it's actually a very cool location. It's the Cobb Corporate Center, just kind of tucked away. We're sort of right sized. We're in a space that's just
ours. Is that
near
Red Hair Brewing? Or are you on the other
side?
No,
we're on the other side.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're like where the Applebee's and the Indian restaurant, we're up on that side.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And the space is great. We had great partners that helped us get in there and kind of get all that. As a CEO, they don't tell you that basically means, like, all the other things that have to get done are pretty much yours.
Right? Yeah.
So I learned about real estate. I learned about selling real estate.
Especially in a nonprofit. I mean, you have to be all and do all.
Yeah.
You have a great team with you, but you don't have one set of
No, I don't have an attorney on hand. I don't have I don't have all those things. But
got Justin.
I do. Justin's great. I do. He's actually they are so sweet. They sent me a edible arrangements as a congratulations for being in the magazine yesterday.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, how
so sweet.
Yeah.
And we are fortunate that we've got so many good volunteers and supporters them. And we can, for a lot of things, we can go to board members and community members to help us. But there's some things that you can't people can't volunteer to fix or do. And but all the real estate stuff was crazy. I've never in my life learned so much so quickly about real estate and construction and, like, all the weird little things that go into all of that.
Yeah.
But we, Andrew Walker, who's in Cobb, who works for Colliers, and then Dan Byers, who they were our brokers, and they did a phenomenal job. They were so great. We had CDH Partners that helped us with design, and Jonathan Fallon, and then Lex Stein, which is a construction that did, and they had us in there in like 7 weeks. Turnaround, which was insane. I mean, nobody thought it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And so we're very lucky. But the sell of the building really has allowed us to kind of refocus on mission. And so now that we don't have to manage event space, we can actually focus on what we do
and
best.
And what good timing.
Right? Since there are no
going
events.
On.
Yes. Thank goodness that all worked out. But it's really helped us to understand what we're good at and kind of maybe what we're not so good at or what we can
do. Kind of refocus your mission.
Yeah. Repositioning, really understanding. We've got so many, like I said, it's weird when you get into homelessness and housing programs, and the money that comes with all that is all directed through, like, various streams, and they all have different rules.
A lot of red tape.
The government means really well, and then they just, like, manage to make everything as complicated as possible. So, they mean well. Bless their hearts.
You've adopted some Southern things already, right?
It's a good Southern tool. It really is. The other one I like is, I'm going to go ahead and let you go now.
Right? Yeah.
That's my other favorite Southern, like, nicety to get people out of your space. I'm excited for the opportunity because I think we can do some really fun things and just kind of doubling down on mission and helping more people and partnering and being a better community servant and sort of meeting the community where it is. So we've jumped at some opportunities to just help where we can right now because that's what we have to do.
Right.
Not necessarily as strategic as I would like to be right now because a lot of it is just like this is happening or this is available or we need you to do this. And so we're doing a lot of that right now. But in the background, we're working on a strategic plan and sort of a coordinated effort around just the repositioning and communications and who we are right. and what we stand for and how we can move people through and really help on that longer term.
Right.
Because our vision has always been and always will be that sort of self-sufficiency. How do we get people to be in a place?
Yeah, because I think so many times people – and I talked to Dr. Reigert about this with their mission with homelessness – is some people can get the wrong idea that you're just giving out free money or you're just giving out freebies. And that's really not – I mean, the people that you're serving are real people. I mean, some of them had great jobs, had great families for whatever reason or just – down on their luck or are going through a hard time and just trying to find their way back. It's somebody's son. It's somebody's daughter. It's, you know. Yeah.
I always say, you know, our business is really hard for a lot of reasons. And partly because you're talking about human behavior.
Yeah.
And humans are flawed. Like we're just – that's sure. part of what it means to be human. And people don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody grew up – not understanding or not being shown or not being demonstrated that there is a different way or that there are certain priorities or that you have to value yourself first. And,
right.
you know, because I think what we find with most of – not most, but I mean a lot of our families, especially ones that have had sort of systemic long-term issues, is that they were never taught that they had value. Just as their own humans,
yeah.
right? That they have value and that they bring something to the table and that they're unique and special and that they have to believe that in themselves and kind of carry that with them.
And they don't have to follow the path or the pattern that they've
right.
been shown.
Right. But they yeah. – I mean, they nobody told them that. And definitely nobody showed them that. And very few times were they invested in or were they made to feel like they had opportunity or – so you're talking about folks that have just done the best they could with what was in front of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of us would look at it and be like, well, I would never have done that or I would never have made that choice or that – well, yeah, because you know different and you were shown different, you were taught different and it, you know, makes sense to you. And for these folks, it doesn't always. And so they are doing the best they can. And that may not be the best. And that's where we come in to try to really help direct that and give them other tools. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of life skills classes and a lot of budgeting and a lot of workshops on goal setting and kind of getting themselves to that point.
Yeah.
But it's human behavior and we're trying to modify human behavior and we're trying to assist people in investing in themselves.
Yeah.
And that's hard. It's just hard.
Because it's got to be one of those things like I think about like my friends who – are still dealing with student debt or, you know, it's like if you feel like you're constantly just treading water and you can't get out of the pool.
Yeah.
Like
– it's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's also very expensive to be poor.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. I mean, I hate to say that, but I don't think people understand how expensive it is to be poor. When you don't have resources, you don't have the ability to do things on a, you know, an economies of scale kind of approach, it's so expensive. When you're late on things and you get late fees that you can't pay, when you're in an extended stay hotel because you need shelter immediately and you can't get a
credit.
Lease. Yeah. I mean, it is incredibly expensive to be poor. And we've done a really bad job of sort of approaching the systematic issues of why people are in poverty. And so it's but it's a long-term fix. I mean, those are long-term things. And so what we do is in the short term try to help people get the leg up that they need to sort of get out of those situations.
And what a wonderful feeling it's got to be for you when you get the people out of the pool and they can go on with their lives.
We had a great – so we had a lady Thanksgiving, right? So our reimagined Thanksgiving where we had people put the boxes together themselves.
Because you guys give Thanksgiving meals
Thanksgiving
out to families.
Mm-hmm. We gave out 1,000 boxes this year. So we fed 1,000 families for Thanksgiving. Usually big food drive, lots of food. People put them together. Volunteers come, hundreds of you. This year we couldn't do it that way. So we had everybody put together boxes and deliver the boxes to the lodge. Those boxes, well, that's all great. Way like
I was going to say. I remember pushing carts out to people's cars because it's like, I can't carry this.
They're so heavy. So that was like lesson learned for us on what to do differently maybe. But we had to hire sort of brute labor to like come in and help us to
hire like
them.
A moving company.
Yeah. Basically, we're like, we need people who can actually like throw these around.
I don't need two men in a truck. I need like 20.
10. Yeah. Yeah. So one of the ladies who actually came and who was so incredibly strong and awesome and was able to help us get some of those moved around stopped to actually tell us her story. And 2.5 years ago, she had just had a baby and was homeless. And she was in our program. And mm-hmm. we put her in our short-term housing and gave her a place to be for 30 days and then helped her get into an apartment of her own. And her daughter's, you know, almost 3. And she was so grateful. And she was so, like, amazed that she was in a position where she was able to help us
yeah.
and kind of give back and do something for us. And so it was – that was really cool because that was a very unexpected it was a very unexpected story, but it's great when we see people on that side. And we've got people – and we had a woman who came to us a couple months ago, like kind of mid-pandemic, and she had been in our program in like 1999 and now has a son who just graduated like from med school or opened his own business or something.
Oh
I mean, something
gosh.
Really incredible that she was so proud of. And
she just wanted to share with y'all.
Just wanted to share. And we've got folks that will check in with us or that our case managers will check in with some of their longer-term clients. And we've got homeowners. We've got – I mean, we've got all kinds of stories.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's great to see it when it works.
Well, thank you so much for the work that you do for our community and CFR. And New Mexico's loss is Georgia's gain.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining me today, too, Melanie. This has been great.
Thanks. Thank you, Katie.
When you have experienced the loss of a loved one, you can trust Carmichael Funeral Home to guide you through the arrangements necessary to create a meaningful ceremony that celebrates the unique life being honored. At Carmichael Funeral Homes in Smyrna and Marietta, our staff is committed to providing your family with the highest quality care and service in your time of need. In addition, we take pride in our responsibility to lighten your burden as you take the first steps toward healing. No matter what your choice, we believe in lives lived well. Please contact us with any questions regarding your pre-arrangement requests. At Carmichael Funeral Homes in Smyrna and Marietta, individual attention, providing support to the community, healing lives and grieving hearts, and celebrating lives well lived are our privilege to help. Contact us today or visit us online at CarmichaelFuneralHomes.com. Celebrating memories you'll always cherish. Carmichael Funeral Homes.
This podcast is brought to you in part by AM 920 The Answer. Atlanta's home for news, opinion, and insight. Just go to am920theanswer.com to listen live. That's am920theanswer.com.
Thank you for joining me for the Cobb Life edition of the Marietta Daily Journal podcast from your local news source, the Marietta Daily Journal and MDJ Online. Be sure to pick up a copy of this month's Cobb Life magazine and visit us online for more complete details on the stories we've discussed, plus more stories that affect you and the people of Cobb and surrounding areas. Subscribe and share this podcast to get all the latest hyperlocal updates, plus great stories about what makes living in Cobb so special. Or ask Alexa or Google Home to play the Marietta Daily Journal podcast for you. Share your thoughts or questions with us in the comments section or call the MDJ podcast comment line at 404-997-8655. We might even share your comment on an upcoming episode. The MDJ podcast is produced by BG Ad Group. Jacob Sutherland, Director. Copyright 2020, all rights reserved.